Hello, everybody, and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am Tim.
And I'm Willie.
Hey, Willie, how's it going?
It is going.
It is going.
Yep, 2020 rolls on.
It does.
Yep, we're just getting ready for the for Halloween. By the time you guys hear this, it'll... Well, no, you'll be the All Hallows Eve.
It's Devil's Night, right?
Devil's Night. Yeah. Angel's Night, yes.
Yeah, Angel's Night, yeah.
Yes. No, yeah, I guess All Hallows Eve is Halloween. Halloween Eve, yeah. So, yeah.
You ever do anything for Devil's Night?
No.
Maybe I should make like some deviled eggs.
There you go. That's good.
Yeah. Remember the one year we were supposed to get the clown purge?
I remember that. Yeah. No. They changed it to Angel's Night, remember?
No.
In Detroit because of all the fires.
Detroit had some issues. Yeah, that's right. I'm from not Detroit, and we did not have as many issues. It was like once in a while, like a house would get TP'd.
Yeah, lots of arson, I think, in Detroit.
In Detroit, yeah. A lot of abandoned issues. Buildings.
So. It's certainly changed, so that's good. But
yeah.
But yeah.
Well, it's Angel's Night now.
It is Angel's Night now.
It is.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
Tis the season. Are you dressing up for Halloween this year?
Probably not. So I last year bought a costume, a Jughead from Riverdale costume, and I did not wear it because I was down in Florida at the time.
Okay.
On Halloween, and it was like 90 degrees at like 8 o'clock at night, and I'm not wearing this leather jacket and Jughead costume. So I may dress up for Halloween, just around my house even.
Yeah, that's cool. At least you're taking part in the spirit. Are you guys doing candy or no? Where you stand on that? Bit of a debate this year.
Yeah, I don't have anything against it necessarily, but I don't think we're going because we have not picked up any candy.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to either, and it's not even necessarily because we're against the idea of doing it. I just don't think we're going to do it this year. We got Josie, and we want to take her, and we're going to take her over to Nikki's parents to. You know, see them and maybe go to like a couple of like houses across the street where we trust people and know people. So,
yeah,
and that'll be about it. She got a mouse. She's a mouse this year. She picked it out. She wanted to be a mouse.
Okay.
So and we got her a big.
Any particular mouse or just a mouse?
Just a mouse.
Just a mouse.
She wants to be a mouse.
Okay.
So we got her a mouse costume and we got her a stuffed brick of cheese. So she's walking around with that. Yeah, should be good.
I've got a real brick of cheese if you want. We've got a big Costco brick in my house. Every day I just go down with a knife. Cut me off a slice, some crackers, I'm good.
You're all set, man. What kind of crackers do you eat your cheese with?
I'm a Ritz guy.
So I was always a Ritz guy. Growing up, that was if you were going to do brick cheese and crackers, it was Ritz, right? And now I do Triscuit.
I like a good Triscuit. Yeah. Are you a plain Triscuit guy?
I like plain Triscuits. I like the different types too, though.
Okay.
I like the different varieties. Nikki's a Triscuit fan, so she'll buy. We have a couple different varieties in the house at any given time. You know, usually we have like the simpler, like some of the garlic ones or like the sea salt and pepper ones. Right now we have a cheddar Triscuit upstairs that I have not tried yet, but curious to see how that is. Cheddar Triscuit is not something I would have put together, but.
No, I don't think I've ever tried that one.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah. I'm a plain Ritz guy. We got the extra toasty Cheez-Its at home now too.
Mm.
So, if you're
They're excellent.
Are they good?
They're excellent.
You know what's really good since we're on the subject of stuff you buy in the in that aisle?
Yeah.
You seen the Martha Stewart Snoop Dogg commercial for the Tostitos dip, the green avocado
yes.
dip? That stuff is excellent.
Is it good?
Highly recommended.
I'll have to get that next time we go to the store. That's a good idea. Good stuff.
Yeah. So, hey, if you want talk that's not like this at all, check out the Midwest Game Nerds.
They might talk about Triscuits.
They do talk about food, don't they?
Yeah.
Whoops. So if you want more talk like this, check out the Midwest Game Nerds. Apparently, they haven't been playing much, is what they've said. So they're talking about the PS5, the Xbox Series X, and Destiny. They're talking about Destiny this week.
Back in form. Yeah, that's good.
We're coming up on the big PS5 release, I think, next month. So check that out. Get yourself ready.
I saw an unboxing video of the PS5.
Did you?
Yes.
What'd you think of it?
It's huge.
We got a Resident Evil game for that bad boy?
Not at launch.
Okay.
There will be a Resident Evil 8, though.
Okay.
You need to play 7 so you can be ready.
I am stuck on Mario. So Mario 64, they're coming out with a patch for the camera. In November. Mario 64, bless it, still an excellent game, but the camera does not hold up at all.
Yeah, I remember last time I played it thinking that.
And I love Sunshine, which is also on the Mario All-Stars collection. But Sunshine's Camera is even worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I am not going to play it until they hit release that patch.
That's good. I'm glad that they're doing that. It's surprising that they're doing that, but I think it's cool.
Yeah.
It's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never had an issue with... I think Galaxy was really great, the camera on Super Mario Galaxy.
Yes. And you know what? Honestly, at the time, the 64 camera
yeah, it
was
worked.
Cool,
yeah.
But like now, modern...
Yeah, it game, doesn't hold up.
It's annoying as hell.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like playing, I think, any older games from... that generation of gaming, sometimes certain elements don't hold up.
Right.
I don't think they hold up as well as maybe like the Genesis and Super Nintendo games because they're kind of just universally playable.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. Maybe difficulty-wise, those are kind of rough, but there weren't camera angles in those, right? And there weren't really control. I mean, like you moved left or right.
It was pretty fixed
yeah.
camera,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hard to mix it up with like Mega Man or Mario, like old school Mario.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and 64 was the first of that kind anyway. So.
Yes, yep.
So yeah, check them out. I want to, real quick, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Resident Evil. I want to talk about Jason Kimmel. He gave us, I don't want to talk about him, I want to talk about his feedback.
The man himself, yeah.
We got some virus feedback.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, which makes me very excited. He pointed out that the movie ends with, and I thought this was interesting because it was not a read that I had, that two white people ultimately get their happy ending and the minorities had to die to aid them in their quest to being successful. But hey, maybe they're not dead. They were hard-ass cool characters in the story. But then he gets the meat of virus, which is the entire Donald Sutherland plot is so off the rails and over-the-top cartoon villain ridiculous, and I kind of love it.
Yeah.
So he
agreed.
Says it's definitely an underappreciated and relatively forgotten movie that definitely deserves a second look as an entertaining romp, and if James Cameron had made this movie, not Terminator, but made this movie with quirky and dumb robots that would only get made from spare parts available on a boat in 1999, it could be an all-time classic. Now, I bring that up because the first reading is really interesting, and
yeah.
I think we've talked about that. I think we talked about that a little bit in Scream 2,
yeah,
where like that is a thing that occurs in a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad he pointed that out, because you and I were both blinded by Sutherland.
It's hard not to be. In most circumstances, especially in virus.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a fun read.
It is, yes.
I'm pleasantly surprised we got some virus feedback and some very thoughtful virus feedback, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Any other feedback to get into?
I want to point out that Steve posted and he tagged us in it, so you can go on our Instagram too and just follow the tags. But he tagged us in it. He carved a Nosferatu pumpkin that is so sweet.
Is it sweet?
Oh, it's really
good. I haven't seen it yet.
So go on our Instagram, Horror Movie Yearbook on Instagram. You can find us tagged in that post. And it is really cool. That's our good pal, Steve. He posted that. He carved a really cool Nosferatu. And if you want to leave us feedback while you're there, do it. Horror Movie Yearbook on Instagram, @HMYearbook on Twitter. Horror Movie Yearbook on Facebook. And then horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That I just looked at the Nosferatu pumpkin. It's excellent. Well done, Steve. That's
so
kind of incredible. Will you come to my house and carve some for me, please? I don't have it in me.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Awesome.
All right, Willie. Let's talk about... you have been watching some things. I know we want to talk about Resident Evil, right?
Okay,
let's just kick it off.
I watched Room on the Broom with Josie this evening. Room on the Broom was a short animated film about a witch and some animal companions she has and a dragon. And I believe it won the Oscar for Best Animated Short. The year it was released. I'm fairly certain about this.
Yes.
It did. Okay.
I looked it up, and I think, because this is with Simon Pegg and Gillian Anderson, right?
Yes. I had never seen it before, and Nikki added it to Josie's watch list on her Netflix profile. And I was like, that's, well, she like goes, I want to watch Switch movie. And I'm like, okay, we'll watch the Witch movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was delightful. If you have not seen Room on the Broom, it's like really sweet.
Yeah.
And I kind of loved it. So, yeah, well worth a watch.
What's it about?
It's about a witch, and she's got a cat companion, and she's traveling across the lands on her broom, meeting new animal companions, and they all ask her, do you have room on the broom for me? And then she goes, yeah, come on. And then they, like, fly. But the whole time there's a dragon following her because the dragon wants to eat a witch.
Okay.
So, yeah.
As dragons do sometimes.
Of course.
Who is the witch, Gillian Anderson?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Simon Pegg narrates.
Oh, that's nice. He's got a nice voice.
It's very cool. Yeah, I liked it a lot. That was really cute. Josie loved it too. So she was mesmerized the whole time.
Does Josie have any other horror adjacent movies in her Netflix?
She watched some Night of the Creeps with me today. So
good. Did she?
I wrapped up the movie today. She did. She goes, I like this. I like this zombie movie. That's what she said. I like this zombie movie. And she started at like the finale when stuff starts hitting the wall.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, God, can I watch this with her? Like, yeah. Is she going to handle this? I guess we'll see how she sleeps tonight. But she didn't seem freaked out at all about it.
When she gets up tomorrow and she says Miller time, then you know you've got a winner.
Yes. Throw me. Yeah. Then I'll know that I've done something right. But I did explain to her that was Tom Atkins, just so she knew. So she was aware. Okay. She needs to know.
We'll be talking a lot more about Tom Atkins later.
A lot more about Tom Atkins. Anyway, yes, Resident Evil. You know, we love to talk Resident Evil on this show.
Yes.
There are three, not one, not two, but three Resident Evil projects in various stages of production right now.
Yes. Okay. Explain these to me.
So the first one is a Netflix, live action Netflix series that is apparently based in the Mila Jovovich movie universe that takes place after those movies, okay? And it's about the Wesker daughters, the daughters of Wesker, which sounds really funny to me. It does not sound good.
Oh, this is the Wesker daughters one.
Yes, yes. Moving to New Raccoon City or whatever it's called. It does not sound good, but I think it's going to be really funny.
Do you have any idea when Wesker,
had children?
Did his seed, I guess, when this would have taken place.
If he, you know, he probably would have done it as some sort of, like, science experiment, right? Like, I don't think Wesker was having one-night stands. He doesn't strike me as the type.
You think he spliced his...
He had some sort of, some sort of weird, maybe even, like, an in vitro situation or something to make sure that his legacy would live on. I don't know. But
It will be canon, is what it says. It's the first headline.
To what? No, it sounds like it's gonna. If it takes place anywhere in any continuity, it sounds like it's gonna be the Jovovich. In fact, I've heard that perhaps she's gonna be involved in some way, shape, or form. So, I guess it remains to be seen. This one does not sound very.
Oh, so this would have been okay. So this would have been part of movie Wesker. These children.
Yes. Okay. If that's the case.
Okay.
President Wesker. So, yes. Hey, you know what? We've had a history of some presidents that like to get a little freaky with. With the ladies, so to say the least. So it's not too much of a leap to say that President Wesker perhaps did as well. Anyway, so that's that one. There's another Netflix series that's called, I believe, Resident Evil Infinite Darkness, that is a CG animated series that takes place in the video game continuity. Now, there have been a series of video game or of CG animated movies that have taken place in the continuity as well. I think there's three of them now. Degeneration, Damnation, and Vendetta.
Any one in particular you would recommend?
I think they're all worth a look.
Are they cool? Okay.
Vendetta gets kind of dumb when they start advertising a Ducati, but like...
Oh, excuse me?
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a Ducati like motorcycle advertisement in the middle of the movie.
Okay.
And it stands out like...
I'm on board.
But all in all, I think they're actually worth checking out.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not great, but they're fun. But this is going to once again take place in the video game continuity. How much effect it'll have on the games, I doubt. But I mean, I don't think it's going to do anything to contradict any of the games or anything like that. It's going to have Leon and Claire, so the leads from Resident Evil 2. Will be the leads in the Netflix animated series. So that's happening. So two Netflix shows. Finally, we've got the long gestating Resident Evil live action feature film reboot.
Right. This is the one that's bounced around. James Wan has been attached to it.
Was involved at one point. Yeah. It is now being directed by Johan Roberts, who directed 47 Meters Down and Strangers Pray at Night. Two movies that I enjoyed.
Yeah, me too.
I think he's got a good visual style. I think he could pull it off.
I think Pray at Night is kind of great, actually.
Yeah, I really like the movie.
Yeah.
This one it's weird because it's been, like I said, it's been gestating for a long time, but then all of a sudden they're like, here's the cast, and then it was like, we're shooting now. And it just kind of came out. It didn't come out of nowhere because that would be... It didn't come out of nowhere because it's been gestating, but like I guess the production just kind of started and we're like, oh, shit. So it's got a really strong cast, I think. This is based on the games, finally. That's why I'm excited.
Yeah.
This sounds like it's going to be an adaptation of the games. The only thing that gives me some pause is that it looks like it's adapting both the first and second games in one movie, which is a little strange because they're two very different stories. You've got your one in the mansion, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a its own thing. And then you've got the one where Raccoon City is being. So I'm not sure how they're going to pull that off. I don't know if it's going to be they're parallel or they're happening at the same. I don't know what the.
They could do like flashbacks to the
maybe
mansion.
Maybe flashbacks mansion.
I wouldn't like.
I want the mansion to have its own movie. To be honest with you,
yeah.
Or maybe the Resident Evil 2 stuff is just the last.
That's kind of what's like.
Maybe it's like a setup for
the last act. Like maybe the last act takes place there, and then it goes out bigger.
Maybe.
From there. Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. But that being said, I'm excited just based on the fact that we're at least gonna. I don't need a one for one. Translation of the games. I don't. The games are their own thing, and they're enjoyable enough on their own. Yeah. I just want it to feel like the games, and to have characters from the games that I like being the characters I like from the games, which is nothing we've gotten before in terms of the live action movies. Right. So I'm excited for that. Hopefully they're able to do that. If they can pull that off, if it feels like one of the games, I'll be happy. But we've got Hannah John came in as Jill Valentine.
Okay.
She was Ghost in Ant-Man and the Wasp. She was the guess villain, not really. A villain per se in the movie, but she was.
I honestly don't remember that movie. It's been on cable.
Is the actress here. I'm showing Tim a picture.
Okay. I mean, she looks like Jill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Looks wise, that's a good cast. Yeah.
We've got Kaya Scodelario. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that as Claire Redfield.
Okay.
She was in the Maze Runner series of movies, and she was also on the show Skins, which I believe is quite popular.
Oh, British show, I believe.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We've got Robbie Amell as Chris Redfield. And if you look at him, he looks like Chris Redfield.
There's a movie with Robbie and Stephen Amell on Netflix that is like a B-action superhero movie, and I'm blanking completely, but it's the Amell brothers, and it's kind of fun. It's like a gritty, like, superhero movie, kind of. It's really fun. I wish I remembered the name of it, but just look at it. It's a decent little B-action flick out there.
That's cool to know. I haven't seen a ton of Robbie Amell. I hear he's good, so
it's good casting.
He looks like Chris Redfield to me, so and this is this is the actress that they got for Claire. I'm going to show it to. This is Kaya. She looks like Claire to me.
Yes.
So they're certainly. It seems like they're getting talented people that actually look like the characters. We did get Leon is going to be played by. Avan Yogia, I believe is his name. They went with a Middle Eastern actor for Leon, which is cool. I think that it's good to mix it up a little bit. And he was actually in Zombieland 2. I don't know if you've seen Zombieland 2.
I have.
He is the kind of goofy guru dude who like...
Okay.
Yeah, so he's playing Leon. we've got Tom Hopper from The Umbrella Academy, which is very popular on Netflix. He's playing Wesker, and he looks a lot like Wesker.
Oh, man, that is... Good Wesker casting.
Like, spot on. He's playing Wesker, which is very cool. And then the only other person that's been announced so far is as William Birkin. You remember William Birkin, the scientist who becomes infected, is being played by Neil McDonough, which is really good.
Oh, my God. I do love me some Neil McDonough.
Yes.
Star of Street Fighter, A Legend of Chun-Li.
You know it, man. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this turns out. I hope I've seen some set pictures now, and it's pretty darn cool in terms of how it seems like how faithful they're being to the look of the games. I showed you a couple pictures of the mansion, which is insane. Like, it looks like the man. Like, I thought it was a still from
those
the games.
Those set photos. Did those just come out, those set photos?
Yeah.
Okay, those are really cool.
Really cool. And then I've seen some of the stuff of, like, the front of the RPD gates and stuff. It looks just like the game. It's kind of incredible. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm optimistic.
The director has a terrific visual style, and I think that'll work well.
Yeah.
And with a good script, I think this will be.
Yeah.
So how would you rank them then, in terms of excitement?
The live action movie I think is number one for me. Just to see like a relatively faithful adaptation would be nice.
And this will be a theatrical.
This is intended to be on the big screen.
Okay.
Yes, this is a movie. You know,
it's a movie. It's not straight to streaming.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Who knows, but. And then I would say the animated Netflix series and then the live action. I'll watch all these. Don't get me wrong. And we'll talk about them, or I will at least.
Oh, we can. When do these come out?
Believe that the animated series is the only one that has an official date, and it's next year.
Is it next year? Okay.
So, what that means, I don't know, but the live action series, I haven't heard much. It got a ton of bad. I wouldn't be shocked if it gets retooled. based on the response online, was pretty bad.
Was it pretty rough?
Yeah. Okay. So I think people are just, we did what, 5 or 6 movies, the Jovovich movies, and they were very popular. They have a huge fan base. I have nothing but respect for the people who like those movies and stuff. But I think the Resident Evil fan base as a whole is kind of like, okay, we got 6 of those. Can we try to do something a little closer to what we like? So I can understand the people being
just
frustrated.
Let them see Wesker's daughters first. Let them.
Yeah, they might love them.
This may be hit new characters.
Yeah, you never know. Anyway, so no, I'm excited about all those, but for varying reasons, for different reasons. What monster do you want to see in this movie? Like, what Resident Evil monster are you excited to see? Are you hoping you'll get to see? You fight a lot of gooey things.
Yeah, remind me of the first one. It's been a while. What do we got in the first one?
Well, you get the Tyrant. It was the big end boss guy with the claw arm. You've got the hunters, the reptile lizard dudes that leap around and cut your head off.
Screw those.
Zombie dogs.
Zombie dogs. You know what? It would be one of the other two, because zombie dogs, I feel like,
Have been done. Yeah, they kind of been done.
She kicks him in the face in the
movie. You know what I like in the first game?
Yeah.
The Chimeras. You remember those guys?
Yeah.
They're in the boiler room and stuff, and they like try to pull you up into the vents with their hook claws. They're horrible, and they skitter. And then you read the backstory about them, how like they Umbrella, and I hope we get into some dark Umbrella stuff too, because the whole story about the Chimeras is that they kidnapped homeless women and impregnated them with T-virus infected fly embryos. And these things burst out of them. It's horrifying.
I hope we get some disjointed dialogue, too. The diaries.
I hope Barry's in it, right?
Yes.
Because Barry's got the best of the best lines. I always wanted Jeff Daniels as Barry. That was always my hope, you know?
Right.
Anyway. But, so Resident Evil, it's happening. I'm looking forward to it.
First one's got the big snake, too, right?
Yeah.
No.
The giant snake?
Never.
That'd be cool.
Never.
The giant spiders are in it, too. Oh, the big plant guy. Remember the plant that you fight? Plant 42? You fight the...
You know what? There's my answer. Plant 42.
He'd be fun. Yeah, he'd be fun. He's a Romero script.
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah, good old Plant 42. Anyway, so looking forward to that. It should be kind of fun. Fun to see.
We also watched the Halloween trailer just now. I did.
Halloween Kills,
The Halloween Kills trailer. I don't have a ton to say about this, actually.
It's the second teaser.
It's the second teaser. So, spoilers if you are a spoiler phobe. It looks cool. We've gotten a. It's just like it should be out by now.
Yeah, we should be.
We should be watching this by now,
which is a bummer.
I feel like it. It's just.
It's a bittersweet thing.
Like I kind of don't even want to watch these things because I don't know. This will come out next year now. I got to wait 2 years for this.
Yeah, I'm with you. I get that.
Yeah,
it's just everything about movies right now in terms of. New stuff is just a bummer right now. I mean, a lot of things are a bummer right now, but
right.
I think I can't get excited for anything because you don't really know what the hell is going to happen at this point.
Well, it's just like, how much more marketing should I be excited about?
Right? Yeah. Like the fact that they're still releasing Black Widow trailers is kind of weird.
Yeah.
You don't know when that movie's going to come out.
So the content itself, though, he's alive. Michael is alive.
Yeah, no shock there. I think the first teaser kind of gives away how he gets out of the house, which is actually kind of reasonable and understandable. The fire department shows up and busts in the house to see if anybody's in there.
Yeah.
And he gets out. That's pretty fair. They did go with a half-burnt mask, it looks like, which I think is what a lot of people were hoping for, some sort of burnt element to the mask, which is cool. There's a nice slashing scene with blood flying all over the place.
But there's a good blood splurt scene. I quite enjoyed that. A quick cut.
A little bit of viscera.
Yeah.
I think they're going to go a little harder. Balls out with the gore and stuff. I think that they realize this is sequel time. Now we don't need to adhere maybe to Carpenter's kind of, restrained.
We can just go full Dr. Sertan death.
Yes, which honestly at this point I'm fine with. The one thing I was interesting that I noticed, well, I saw Tommy in there, which is kind of fun.
Okay, I might have missed him.
He's it was interesting because there's a couple shots in that little teaser of mobs, and I keep hearing about how there's
the very end. That was what I was going to talk about. Yeah, was the mobs.
There's a bit of my understanding is a bit of the story has to do with Haddonfield kind of going fuck this,
and rising kind of
we're going to kill this guy. With Halloween 28, was it 18, 17, 17? God, I can't
think. 2018.
Yes, 2018. with the last Halloween movie, I think they kind of stumbled into accidentally almost finding themselves in a spot where their movie was more relevant because of the Me Too movement that just happened to be happening around that time. Mm-hmm. I'm almost wondering if this might wind up finding its way into being culturally, socially relevant with this whole mob mentality angle that they're going with some of the plot.
Yes.
In regards to some of the stuff we've seen, certainly with
everything.
Everything. Right now. Yeah, 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 really. Yeah, everything.
Just the political climate in mm-hmm. general right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I almost wonder if we're going to see some of that.
That's kind of what I took from it, too.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see it.
And Blumhouse leans into that pretty heavy, especially since Get Out.
Yeah, and that's okay.
And mm-hmm. that's okay, too. Sometimes I feel like they might shoehorn it in sometimes.
I don't think this will be the case.
But I don't think so, either.
Because they shot this all before that stuff was going on, before 2020 happened. So I don't think that any of it was done as a reaction, certainly.
And this is McBride wrote this one too, correct? So McBride always has that stuff kind of in his work anyway, yeah. a lot of the time. So
yeah, even his very heavily comedic stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because Vice Principals and shoot, Eastbound and Down, yeah. and all yep. that stuff it's in there if yeah. you want to look for it. So, sure. But it also reminded me of Halloween 4, I believe.
Yeah,
it reminds me very much of Halloween 4. Halloween
4. Yeah, where like the redneck crew decides they're going to go get.
It's a very universal yeah. monsters movie thing to do as well.
Yeah, grab your pitchforks and your torches. And, yeah,
and the villagers sure. rise up.
Yeah, and it looked like Tommy was leading a crew of them. He had okay. a baseball bat, and he looked like he was leading the charge, so to speak, from what I could tell. So, no, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I am. But I guess, I mean, it's like it's a year away, so I don't want to. I can only get excited for something anymore. I used to be like, it'd be like years leading up to it, I'd be like, pouring over message boards and looking up everything about it I could find and watching everything. And now I'm just like, I'll get excited about it like the month it's going to happen.
That's kind of how I am yeah. too. Yeah. That's kind of, yeah, half the time I forget stuff is coming out.
Right. Maybe that's just growing up. I don't know.
This would have been one of the movies, though, I would have dropped $20 on at home. And I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I'm a little bit. I get it. I get why they're not doing that. I'm a little bummed they didn't selfishly because I would have liked to have just seen the damn movie, but I understand it.
Because they're probably going to do some, I mean, I don't want to predict the future, but I can see them doing some sort of half release thing anyway next year.
I wouldn't be shocked. Who knows?
Because
who knows?
I don't want to get too far into that.
That's pretty far out. I mean, that's a year from now. It's hard to say. I can't even begin to imagine what the landscape of our world is going to look like.
And theatrical releases will be it by that point.
Yeah. So who knows?
Yeah, that is one of the ones. I wanted to watch Bill and Ted. But,
yeah, me too.
But by the time I was out of town when it came out, and then I was like, you know what, I'll just wait.
Yeah.
Because it's going to drop to like $6 soon.
Right. And I feel, I don't know, if I had felt comfortable getting together with a big group of people and like going in right. on it together, that might be one thing, but I, you know, try not to do that too often, you know, if I can help it. So I'll just wait.
That's kind of how I am too. But Halloween, Halloween, Candyman would have been the two.
Yeah, that I would have dropped $20 some money on Candyman too.
$20 right away. Mm-hmm. The Candyman one kind of bugged me out. I remember the week it got canceled, or not canceled, but moved back. I got a Rue Morgue magazine with Candyman on the cover. I'm like, ugh, bummer.
Yeah. When is that coming out now? What's the new plan?
It's next year, I think. I think next summer.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of, it's interesting with horror, because I don't think horror has a lot of the hold up with blockbusters is international. They don't want to, I mean, the Bond thing's going to get pushed back to whenever they can make that China money, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of the Marvel movies are, too.
Yep.
I mean, they're just going to get pushed back until it's, I mean, but horror doesn't do gangbusters overseas, as far as I know. I mean,
yeah,
horror and comedy, I think, are the two genres that tend to be more American.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's weird too, is like they're still shooting movies right now, like
Scream 5 or Scream whatever.
Batman shooting. I think Marvel's got a couple movies. They just started shooting Spider-Man 3, and like these movies are like being like Resident Evil's being shot right now. Like so, like there's gonna be this like big weird backlog of like movies. Like, when are these things going to come out?
No, next year. That's the thing with next year. It's like all these movies that were supposed to come out are coming out next year. Did they push everything else back? I haven't kept up with it.
I don't know what you do. Yeah, right. Anyway. All right.
Let's get in the time machine and get out of this year.
Yep. We're going back to 86.
We are going back to August 22nd, 1986.
Yeah.
I'm punching in the numbers.
Wah!
Ooh.
That's my sound because I was a baby.
I thought that was a guitar.
That was my baby. Yeah.
Your baby? August 22nd. When was your birthday again?
March 9th.
A few months old.
This was my first August.
I'm two.
Okay.
Two and a half.
Did you see Night of the Creeps?
I'm two and a half. I did not. I did.
So you were as old as Josie is now, and Josie just saw Night of the Creeps.
Can I be honest with you? I think the so. Let's talk a little bit too about why we picked this movie. Oh, let's. I'll do a little bit of. Let's do a little background first.
Yeah, sure.
So we're in 1986. Papa Don't Preach is the number one song.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, John Tesh has just appeared for the first time on Entertainment Tonight.
Love John Tesh.
Yeah. Round Ball Rock is the NBA on NBC.
Yep.
Great video online if you can find his live performances. John Tesh, terrific live performer.
Yeah, so I don't know if I've told this story before on this show, but my parents bought me a little like Sony stereo system, or I don't know if it was Sony, but it was like a little, you know, like a, not a boombox, but like a stereo with like the two speakers that you hooked up, just a little guy, and it came with a free CD, and it was a John Tesh live in concert CD.
Nice.
I listened to it when I fell asleep at night every night. It was beautiful.
That's probably good nighttime.
Yeah. I had Tesh just sail me away on a boat of dreams.
Ed, I'm going to list off the movies ahead of Night of the Creeps at the box office.
Okay.
So
most of them.
This is going to show you and if you want to jump in and say any words about these movies.
Sure.
Number one is The Fly. Number two is Stand By Me. Number three is Aliens. Number four is Top Gun. Number five is Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Number six is Karate Kid Part 2. Anything to say about the top six there?
I like all those movies.
Number seven, Armed and Dangerous. You remember Armed and Dangerous?
I do.
Yeah, with John Candy and Eugene Levy.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it was very much a cable programmer.
Yeah, it was like a B John Candy movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was like the tier underneath. Most of his stuff was like top. Notch stuff, I thought.
Candy's film work.
But every once in a while, he had one where it was like, yeah, all right. And that would be Armed and Dangerous.
Yeah, it was, I mean, at the time, it was probably an A. Eugene Levy movie.
Love Eugene Levy.
I do too. I didn't mean that as a slight, but.
Very happy for him, by the way.
Eugene Levy. Yeah, I just started watching Schitt's Creek.
It's very funny.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. So I will jump on the bandwagon on that one.
Yeah, no, it's worth it. Yeah, it's worth watching. So.
Yes. Where am I? Number eight, Nothing in Common. I don't know that one.
No.
Number nine, Extremities. Don't know that one.
No.
Number 10, Ruthless People.
Ah, Ruthless People. Yeah, I had a copy of that taped off of HBO on VHS.
Is that the, who is that?
Bette Midler, I believe. Okay. Is the...
Number 11, Manhunter. I believe that's the,
Michael Mann, the first version of Red Dragon.
William Peterson? On film.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Tom Noonan is,
From Fear?
The Tooth Fairy. So yeah, From Fear. Fuck.
Number 12, About Last Night. Number 13, Back to School. I believe that's Rodney Dangerfield.
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed.
Is that the Triple Lindy? Mm-hmm. Where he does the big.
I believe that's it.
Yeah. Number 14, We're Still Going. One Crazy Summer. Number 15, Oh Yeah. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh wow. One Crazy Summer is good too, by the way.
Which one is that?
That's with John Cusack.
Ah, okay.
And I believe Demi Moore.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I like the movie. Yeah.
Number 16, Flight of the Navigator. Okay. So Flight of the Navigator is an old kids movie. And I was over at my buddy's house one time.
Henry Thomas?
I think you're correct there. I was over at my buddy's house and we were just kind of sitting around all day. I think we're kind of hungover. And it was one of those we were just sitting around watching the TV and this dude was like, oh my God, it's Flight of the Navigator. And it was on CBS in the middle of a weekend day or whatever, and he goes, I have to watch this. When I was a kid, this is my favorite movie. So he turned it on, and 2 hours later, after sitting there, me and my buddy were like, this is the most boring shit I ever seen in my life.
his tune was changed. Huh?
I hated that movie. Number 17, Heartburn. No idea. Number 18, Transformers, the movie.
Oh, shit. Yeah. You got the touch.
Thank you.
Bam, bam, bam. Yep.
Number 19, Howard the Duck.
Oh, shit.
And number 20.
I like Howard the Duck, I'm just going to say.
Number 20, debuting at the 20 spot, Night of the Creeps.
Wow.
So this did not do well. No. But as you can see, it had a lot of competition, particularly in horror movies.
It did.
This is a big summer for horror.
Yeah, Aliens killed anything's chances of being, I think.
Well, The Fly was big, too.
That was big, too. Yep. Yeah. So... Yeah, and Night of the Creeps is a weird movie.
It's very different. It's tonally, it's more like something that would come out later in like the 2000s, I would say. And you know what, in some of the 80s, I guess I shouldn't say that, but it is not, you're right, it's not something that necessarily, it is very obviously a movie that would find an audience later.
Well, look at like Slither, right? Slither has a lot of, I think, owes a lot to Night of the Creeps. And Slither was certainly more successful when it came out than Creeps was. And I think that's because the audience in the 2000s and stuff was looking for stuff like this more so. It's, yeah.
Was Fright Night a hit?
Fright Night did okay. Yeah.
That's interesting because tonally this is very similar. And honestly, even the plot and the subject matter is similar just because it's a lot of callbacks to like, it's a lot of meta.
Yes.
Both of these movies. But Fright Night, I almost wonder if Fright Night kind of rode that vampire wave too.
Well, that was probably part of it. That was part of it. And I
sexier movie too.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Sarandon.
So Night of the Creeps, released August 22nd, 1986. Alien brain parasites entering humans through the mouth turn their host into a killing zombie. Some teenagers start to fight against them. This is directed by and written by Fred Decker. Fred Decker, we've talked a little bit. We haven't done a Fred Decker. I guess there's only a couple to do this in really Monster Squad, right?
Right.
We've talked a little bit about him. He's come up, I'm sure, in the Carpenter stuff that we've done because Carpenter was attached to do Shadow Company.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes.
Shadow Company was that Shane Black and Fred Decker kind of got together.
Well, they've been writing partners off and on throughout the years. I mean, they wrote the most recent Predator film together.
They and those two and the two dudes who wrote Bill and Ted shared kind of a frat house, I guess, as they called it. They called it like a writer's frat at, I believe it's UCLA. Either UCLA or USC. I'm blanking. And that's like
one of
those California schools. I think USC, actually, now they're thinking about it, because a lot of the filmmakers from around that time, because they shot this at UCLA, and a lot of the filmmakers around that time came from USC.
Yeah, so, Carpenter went to USC.
USC, I believe. Spielberg went to USC. Yeah. So, in that field, in the film school. So, anyway, they all shared a kind of like a frat house is what they called it. Kind of like the movie nerd frat house is how they refer
Amazing.
To it. Now, have you read Shadow Company, that script? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, love it.
We did talk about this.
Wish it had been made.
Yes.
I read a lot of like unmade stuff. Off and on throughout the years, and that's one of the ones where I was like, God damn, I can see this movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's so well written that you can see the finished product in your head so clearly that it's a bummer that it was never. Who knows? Maybe one day. I mean, weirder things have happened. So
yeah, I mean, they got together for a Predator movie.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but he would do this. He did Monster Squad, which he co-wrote with Shane Black. They co-wrote that, and then he would go on to do RoboCop 3, which kind of...
The less said, the better, probably.
Yeah, kind of killed his career. In
Too bad.
Yeah, and as far as movies goes, you can tell just from interviews, he had a lot of kind of disagreements with studios. I don't think he played the political game, maybe, all that well, and I think he's admitted to that. But he would do some Tales from the Crypt. He wrote Ricochet. You remember Ricochet?
Mm-hmm.
He would work as a script doctor. He did Titan A.E. and Lethal Weapon 4, but then he would come back in 2018 with Black for Predator. So that's kind of a short summation of his career.
Fan of Fred Decker.
Me too.
His two non-RoboCop features, I think, are excellent films, including this one. And if you ever watch him in interviews, he's just a smart guy, just a really, really smart guy. And wish that we could see more from him as a director, but I can understand why things went the way they did. So it doesn't always work out.
No.
So, but he's a very talented writer and a very talented storyteller. So
his commentary on the Night of the Creeps Blu-ray, the Scream Factory, I believe it is very good. I threw it on in the background.
Yeah.
This past week, they also have my favorite. So 90% of Scream Factory featurettes go like this. They blame the marketing. They go, we weren't a big fan of it. The marketing got it wrong. The marketing got it wrong because it comes out and it bombs. And then they talk about how it finds an audience. So that's like, that's how, that's the structure of Scream Factory. And this is a perfect example of that.
Yep.
And they do have a point. So in the feature, but you can check out the feature.
And to be fair, this is a hard movie to market. I don't know how you market this.
I don't either. It's almost
at the time.
It's almost one destined. Well, even like stuff like Slither did not do well.
It didn't kill.
It didn't exactly light the world on fire. No. So this stuff is just horror comedies are hard to market.
Yep.
And they're movies that find an audience later a lot of the time. So
you get those rare ones with like a Shaun of the Dead where it just happens to hit at the right time. But most of the time, yeah, they struggle, I think. So
This stars Jason Lively. A couple facts about Jason Lively. He is the half brother of Blake Lively.
No shit.
Yes.
Wow, how cool is that?
He was also Rusty in European Vacation.
Yes, I knew that.
Yep. And he also owned and operated Jimmy Crack Corn, which is a mobile roasted corn business in Utah. So it's like a food truck.
Cool.
And have you ever had corn on the cob like this where they put flavors on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's delightful.
Yeah, it is really good. Yeah. He had one that was, what's it called? South of the Border, and it has mayo with Parmesan cheese, chili powder, and lime.
I'm down.
Right. I did some research into this when I thought it. Because, yeah, I have had stuff like that before, and it's really good.
I'm totally down.
Yeah. Tom Atkins, who we will talk about more later. Steve Marshall as JC, who didn't do much after Creeps. This was kind of his main role. And then Jill Whitlow was in a music video for the song Hungry by the rock band Winger.
Ah, yeah. I remember the song.
Kip Winger?
Yep.
You remember the song?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not great, but...
I watched the video as research for this. Do you know how this video goes?
No, but I'd love to hear about it.
So, it's Whitlow.
I'm going to take a guess and say she's dancing in some way, shape, or form. Or scantily clad, or both.
You're going to regret this.
Okay.
Because this immediately starts out. Her and her husband have just gotten married.
Okay.
Newlyweds. They're driving, and the car flies off a cliff.
Oh, boy.
It rolls. This is as the song is kicking in, by the way. This is like the first 30 seconds of the movie.
Some dark Winger stuff.
Because I go, what? And... It seriously rolls to the point where like nobody's surviving, except he is apparently thrown out of the car because he rolls around on his belly and he looks back at the car and the car explodes with her in it.
Oh, nice.
So
lovely.
So Jill Whitlow is dead.
Okay.
And the rest of the music video, because there are more of it, are scenes of Winger performing the song and then flashbacks to happier times together where they may dance.
That's not what I saw coming. So this, yeah. Yikes. Yeah, I mean, it's like Jill Whitlow, beautiful woman.
Yes.
I think you and I both agree. This is the 80s. This is you know, Winger's kind of a hair band, more of a ballad-ish hair band, but still.
She's only 17.
Right, yeah, lots of scantily clad gals in the music video. So I would have anticipated something tonally pretty different from what you just explained to me.
Right.
But Winger... He's a storyteller.
Yeah, I think this is pre-November Rain, too. So pre-really artsy kind of stuff like that.
Alrighty.
So yeah, there are your main players. So why did we pick this movie? Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about why.
Why do we pick it now?
Yeah, because this holds a special place for you. We talked a little bit about it last time, but let's reiterate.
Well, I think, first and foremost, I think we picked it now because it's a shit ton of fun. And I think that right now we need that.
Yes.
You and I talked about it. You know, I think we're going to keep it a little light for a little while. We did some heavy stuff for a bit there. And I think it's just, with everything going on in the world, it's movies like Night of the Creeps that keep things a little, give the world some levity and let you relax and have a good time at the show. But, it holds a special place in my heart, specifically, because Night of the Creeps, for me, is a quintessential Halloween movie. It's in the sense that it's got all those things I want out of a movie that I watch around the holiday. It's fun. It's got great comedy to it. It's got fun, gory bits. It's spooky, you know? It's not scary, but it's spooky. It's a fun horror movie. It doesn't have to be a horror comedy necessarily to fall into that category for me, but it's got to be fun and it's got to have spooky stuff, and that this movie definitely has that. This is a movie that I always had on. I wouldn't go as far as to call them legendary, but I threw some pretty fun Halloween parties for a while there.
This is so.
I would say.
Yeah, I want to jump in here because, like, I think the first time I actually watched this movie was at one of your Halloween parties, and it was the first time I think because we worked.
You probably heard of it at some point. I'm sure,
but I never actually sat down and watched it.
Right.
So this was the first time I watched it, but this is also like your Halloween party, and I believe it was probably one of the first ones we watched this at. Your Halloween parties were the first time like we kind of hung out.
Yeah.
Outside of work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So.
Yeah. And that was the, honestly, a lot of people, I think too, a lot of other people that maybe that was like the first time I was really introduced to a lot of people I knew was at those Halloween parties, you know?
Cause yeah, we worked together.
Friends would bring friends and I would invite coworkers, maybe who I didn't know as well, like you at the time or other people. And I always tried, one thing I always tried to do with those Halloween get together and just the house parties in general, we do New Year's stuff here and there and things like that. But, I always tried to have something for everybody because my thing with parties, especially house parties, is I'm thinking like you're going to somebody else's house. So you already have a certain level of discomfort there. That's just the way it is. And not everybody wants to drink and party and play beer pong and do shots and all that kind of that partying stuff. So it was like, okay, that's down in the basement. You know, people are having fun doing that down there. Like, let's provide some entertainment for the folks who maybe aren't into that stuff. So I'd make sure I played horror movies all throughout the night. And I'd usually think
for the smokers too. For
yeah.
Like people that are stoned.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go out to the garage and get really high and then come back in and be like, whoa.
Cause you don't want to be around beer pong when you're.
No, you want to just chill.
Yeah.
But and the fun thing about it, so like I remember the first year I had to like, I'd like the credits would come on and I'd like be checking and making sure like run and grab another one. And years later, I think Gojo was like I'd set up a stack of them and Gojo was always in charge of like throwing the next one in for me.
Nice.
But it was fun because it was nice because occasionally you'd get folks from the basement who might come up and be like, oh, what's this? And sit down and watch. And then you'd have some interaction. It was just cool. It was nice. It was a nice way, I think, to bring people together and have a good time. So, but I always wanted to go for movies like this, movies that were fun and you could throw your own commentary over the top of, and you could throw the subtitles on and it could be loud in the house and you might miss some dialogue, but it wouldn't hurt you. You know what I'm saying? Movies like that. So like this was one that was always in rotation. Trick or Treat is one that was always in rotation. Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. Yeah. that was in rotation a lot. Killer Clowns from Outer Space was one that was in rotation a lot.
Is a Kevin Nauman favorite, Killer Clowns?
He likes it. Yeah, yeah.
Kevin's more a Critters guy.
He's a Critters guy.
That's
what
I'm getting confused with. My bad. Yeah.
Through and through. He also likes the Deadly Spawn.
Chud 2, right?
Bud yes, the Chud. Bud the Chud. Not Chud 1, Chud 2.
We should do a series of movies Kevin Nauman likes.
Of Nauman movies, yeah. I'm going to have to tell him to listen to this episode so he can enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, just threw his name on it, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think for like 3 or 4 Christmases in a row, I just bought him those movies.
Good.
So, like, his DVD collection is very slim, but he just had those movies in them. Yeah, so
better than
I'd
most.
Import Bud the Chud because there was no U.S.
Really?
Release. There was not at the time. Anyway, so, you know, just a certain type of movie. Cabin in the Woods is one that I would add to that rotation if I had threw a party now. That would be in there. So those types of movies. And so I think that because we're nearing the Halloween season and we're in the Halloween season, I think about this movie around this time of year. It's not a movie I watch multiple times throughout the year or anything, but it's something that it always pops in my head around Halloween and I always try and sit down and watch it at least once during the season. So I thought it'd be nice, and you thought it would be nice as well to do this. Yeah.
Now, do you have a personal... I'm going to quiz you. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you have a personal favorite memory from your Halloween parties?
Oh, my gosh.
One that won't get anybody any sort of...
No, no, no. Yeah, for sure. I remember... you as Paul Walker is my favorite memory of you.
I wasn't fishing, but thank you. Yes.
But no, if I had to think of... like that's. I'm just saying, you showing up and nobody really like... We're all kind of like, okay, Tim's just wearing a black polo. Like, he just didn't feel like dressing up. That's fine. I think you just came back from a shift to Family Video, actually.
I was working at the store.
Yeah.
And I walked over.
Yeah.
And I just had my clothes on, and I just said I was Paul Walker. And what's funny is I'm an incredibly bloated Paul Walker at the time.
But it worked out really well, because somebody gave you, like, a toy gun, and you kept posing in the stance from the Fast Five poster.
The Fast Five poster.
And so it was like, yeah, you look just like Paul Walker. So that was fun. But I do remember one time, for some reason this popped in my head.
Just like Paul Walker.
Just like him. It might have been the same year. I was Casey Jones a crappy Casey Jones costume that I cobbled together, and I remember getting really drunk that year. I didn't always get drunk at the Halloween parties. So a lot of the time I tried to stay kind of...
Yeah.
Because I had to clean up
hosting,
and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I got really drunk, and I just remember making making Costco cheese sticks at like 2:30 a.m. and just passing them around everybody. And I think feeding a lot of people by hand.
Yeah.
And I remember laying on the living room floor and just eating cheese sticks and staring at the light. So there's that.
That wasn't the night we sang Boys to Bed, was it?
No, that was not even a Halloween party.
Okay, good. That was just us.
Yeah, we went to the bar, I think. I think we went out for a UFC fight.
You're probably right. Was that same night?
And we drank a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that the night I asked my wife out?
I believe so.
Okay.
And then we got back and we were like, let's sing Boys to Men.
We sang End of the Road.
It's on video somewhere. It's probably better that I don't find it, but... It was good.
No, I'm glad we got to reminisce a little bit about
your
Halloween.
No, those Halloween parties were fun.
Yeah.
I would love to, maybe, now that I'm not going to make a promise, but maybe now that we've been in our house for a couple of years now, and we've got it in a place where we're happy with it, just in time to trash it. Maybe next year, if things are a little safer,
right,
by this time next year, maybe it could be the first year to have a Halloween party again. Probably wouldn't be as crazy as last time, the previous years, because we're all older, but...
People aren't, yeah.
I mean, I'd still get drunk and sing Boys to Men with you, man.
I'm in walking distance.
You're good to go. Walk,
yeah.
Yeah, you're fine.
I would always just pass out on your couch anyway.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I remember after 1 year, you woke up with a flat tire, your truck had a flat
tire.
That
sucked, yeah.
Yeah. You had the pickup truck at that point, didn't
pickup.
You?
I had the pickup. I had the Extreme, I believe, the red pickup.
Yep. Anyway, I'm sure this is very interesting listening for... But Tim had a flat tire. It was very sad. We were saved by my lovely neighbor, Dave Rinaldi.
Yes.
Yes. Shout out to Dave Rinaldi, master electrician.
I had to go. Oh, my God. That thing sucked because it had those specialty tires, too, that I couldn't
just.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I felt so bad. But we wound up just hanging out, I think. You were at my house, like, pretty much all day that day.
Yeah.
We just hung out and watched, like, Total Blackout with Jaleel White.
Shit. Total Blackout.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Total Blackout with Jaleel White. Sci-fi channel.
Anytime you got drunk in my house, we got drunk together, we'd inevitably start watching Total Blackout. And then it would basically just be me and you not interacting, but just staring at Total Blackout on either couch.
What was the premise of that show? They just turned off the lights.
They just turned off lights and made people touch gross shit. And usually they'd try to find like the most ridiculously overly animated human beings they could find, like the most easy to scare people they could find, and make them do that so that they'd like be really freaked out by it. It was very funny. Very funny. And Jaleel would be like, "Welcome to Total Blackout." That's what I remember about the show.
All right. In 1959, onboard a spacecraft, two aliens race to keep an experiment from being released by a third member of the crew. The seemingly possessed third alien shoots a canister into space, where it crashes to Earth. Nearby, a college man takes his date to a parking spot when they see a falling star and investigate. It lands in the path of an escaped criminally insane mental patient. As his date, attacked by the axe-wielding maniac, the boy finds the canister, from which a small slug-like thing jumps out and into his mouth. All right, full stop. We'll talk about the opening here.
Opening's great.
Yes.
Sets the tone for the whole movie. Well, it sets the tone. You don't realize what tone it's setting, but it sets the tone because it's just such a throwback to the to a different era of horror filmmaking, to the B movies, the sci-fi B movie, the Blob, and things like that. And I love that because a lot of this movie is a love letter to that era of movies. And I know Decker wanted to do the whole film in black and white. I'm glad he didn't though, because I think this works the finished product is. I think it works. And I want to say I love that not only does it take you into the tone of the movie and kind of the meta vibe of the movie, but it also starts setting up the various plot threads that wind up actually kind of forming into kind of a cool cohesive story, because you've got kind of three plots going on in a lot of ways, or three threats going on. You've got this whole thing with this axe murderer, you've got this the alien threat, and then you've got the actual zombies, right, which are all related in a certain way. That's kind of fun. So this is where you kind of get to see the seeds are sowed to set you up for a lot of reveals and a lot of connectivity between the three very different types of horror movie. So yeah, I love this intro. I think it's a ton of fun.
You like the little aliens too?
They're awesome. They're little butts.
They got the frowny faces.
Yeah.
They are adorable.
They're adorable.
Okay. How are there not little Night of the Creeps aliens toys just all over?
Where's NECA at?
Right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, come on. Hey, they're making like, you know, I get it. They had to start with, you know, like the Freddies and the Jasons and the Chuckies and stuff. But it's time to start digging into the B and C level horror movies. Let's go.
Yeah.
I want some Night of the Creeps aliens. I want a 2-pack. I want a couple little bastards. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love this opening.
Yep.
I think it's a throwback to, and he talks about a little bit, even the logo is modeled after like the Famous Monsters logo, the Forrest Ackerman magazine logo. So Decker talks about a little bit too, how he wants to make it a throwback to the, like he talked about in a lot of those old Corman 50s pictures, stuff like Night of the Blood Beast and Attack of the Crab Monsters, really kitschy 50s.
Well, even the title, right?
Yes. Yep. Even the title is very much that, which honestly is probably part of the reason why this movie did not do so well, because we're in the 80s now. And what's funny about, so we've talked about this a lot with a lot of 80s movies. Sorry, I choked on my own spit.
Oh, you're good.
A lot of the 80s movies in these are, you see it in one of the biggest movies of the 80s, which is Back to the Future, which is that kind of hearkening back to a simpler time in the 50s, or what's perceived as a simpler time in the 50s. What I like about this movie, that ex-murderer is scary.
Yeah.
Like, he's nuts.
It's a scary scene.
Yeah.
Actually, like, him creeping up behind her and her having no idea he's coming.
Yes.
And he's just like kind of casual. Like, there's no emotion on his face. He's just like casually strolling up to her. That, it's very effective.
It is. It is really good. And it cuts into that kind of, that dreamlike 50s idea that we have. And it also, it's weird to me too, because this thing bombed it. And a lot of the reason it's because, I think a lot of the reason people point to is because those 50s movies had kind of gone out of style, and even the title does that. But what's funny is to me is this has a very similar plot to those 50s movies, those 50s movies it's aping, in that it's kind of about a blandish lead character, a male, and trying to get the girl and trying to save him from the creepy monsters. It's a 50s movie.
And there's a hard-nosed detective.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an adult figure, much like a lot of those 50s movies. So, yeah, it's very similar to that. It's just updated for the 80s. So it's kind of, it's a very smart meta movie in that way. So
I agree.
27 years later, we're in 1986 now. Chris Romero, he's pining over his love lost. He's with his friends JC during pledge week at Corman University. Chris spots a girl, Cynthia Cronenberg.
Yeah, let's stop for a second.
Okay.
There are a lot of fun references to
the list somewhere.
Various horror movie directors. So we've got Corman University, of course, the great Roger Corman. We've got Detective Cameron, who will pop up later. That's James Cameron, right? That's a reference to him. Cynthia Cronenberg, David Cronenberg.
Oh, and Jason Lively plays Chris Romero.
Romero,
yes.
Yep. We've got, I believe JC is
James Carpenter Hooper.
So you've got a John Carpenter, Toby Hooper double reference there. Even the janitor, the hilarious Asian janitor guy, his name is, which one is he? He's, there's a Detective Landis. I know that.
Okay. So I'm going to go down the list here.
Do it.
So we've got Detective Landis, Sergeant Raimi. We have Officer Craven. We have Officer Bava. I think we're missing one. Mr. Miner, which is a reference
Mr. Miner,
to Steve
Miner.
Yeah,
yeah, love that.
Steve Miner helped him get his break, helped Fred Decker get his break, because they worked together. And Steve Miner also shot Second Unit on this.
No shit.
Yeah. So he shot a lot of the Second Unit scenes. Steve Miner, of course, is the director of Friday Part 2 and 3. He also directed House, I believe.
And Halloween H2O.
And House is where Decker kind of got his break, because they took a short story of his and expanded it out into a screenplay.
Steve Miner's kind of an underrated horror director.
He's an underrated, horror
like director in general.
In general.
Yeah. I think he's not super keen on revisiting this kind of stuff, though. Which might be why he's maybe not as, he doesn't do cons and stuff like that, which.
No.
Yeah.
So JC, to get her attention, he decides to join the fraternity with Bradster.
The Bradster.
Bradster or something else, isn't
it? Sick vanity plate.
And Bradster is Cynthia Cronenberg's boyfriend, who heads the Beta Epsilon fraternity. They task him with stealing a cadaver from the University Medical Center and depositing it on the steps of a rival fraternity. Chris and JC find a frozen corpse in a secret room, but when it grabs them, they flee. The thawed corpse then kills a medical student working at the lab. So I will stop here. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between Chris and JC. Because I think it's a... I think there's a realness to this relationship that kind of makes this whole movie work.
Yeah, it gives the movie a ton of heart that it maybe without it, it would not have. Or in a lesser storyteller's hands, I don't think it would have.
Right.
Because they're totally believable. And I had friendships like this that felt like this.
And there's a great scene early in the movie that kind of sets up the rest of the movie where JC calls him out for just calls him out on his bullshit, basically, and calls Chris out on it. And it's a great scene because it sets up that friendship that you kind of need in life where a friend will call you out for being an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not mean. It's just like you're being an ass.
Yeah. It's kind of opening your eyes to like the way you look from somebody on the outside, you know, the way you're acting and behaving. Yeah. No, I had plenty of friendships where I was on either end. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes with the same person on either end of the spectrum. So it feels real to me. And I'm glad you touched on that because the two of them have a lot of, like, I think they have pretty good chemistry.
They're great together. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does make losing JC as a character when we do. I'm glad we do because I think the scene where he realizes JC has been killed is, I think, hits really hard, harder than it would have most movies. But I do miss that character because I love the actor and I like the performance so much that, like, I wish he was in the third act with all the craziness going on. So there's a bittersweetness to his character leaving when he does, I guess. Yeah. And losing that relationship.
And JC he's handicapped in this movie. I don't think they ever say specifically what he has, do they?
Nope.
But even, like, they even talk about it. It's a holdover from, I believe, a short story that he wrote with that character, and that handicap is a holdover from that, but it's never mentioned, and that's just who he is, and it's never touched on.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. I think it's maybe hinted at a little bit more when he leaves the recording later on. It's not hinted at, but it's kind of plays a role in how he's talking in that, but it's never full on. It's never made a point of, which I think it's kind of great.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, and obviously, JC's handicap, whatever the cause, is visible. You know, for me, like, growing up with hemophilia, like, I wasn't visible for the most part. Although there were plenty of times I went to school on crutches because my ankle would be triple the size it was supposed to be and things like that. So, like, there were times when it was like that. But it's funny because, like, how often in our friendship have you thought about the fact that I have hemophilia?
Never.
Because when you're friends with somebody... Yeah. It just doesn't need to be talked about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I find that, I think that that is another aspect of their friendship and about that character that feels pretty genuine. Is it just, it's obviously something he has to deal with and it's part of him, but it's not something that he's like, he's not living for his illness, whatever his illness is, right? That's, so I like that. I like that as coming from that perspective of somebody who has lived through some of that stuff. I find it believable that we never... There's never any, like, what happened to you, you know? I don't know. I appreciate that.
And it sets up... Bradster's kind of funny for a little bit of the movie, and then it sets up the biggest heelish moment.
Yeah.
In the middle of the movie when they kick out his crutches.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
Bradster, he is...
Bradster's that 80s kind of snobs versus slobs. He would be the snobs.
Yes.
Portion of, he's the Animal House. He's the snob in Animal House. He's, yeah.
He's the quintessential 80s
douchebag. High
school or college villain, right? Like, he's James Spader in, like, all the 80s movies. Mm-hmm. Or Zabka, Billy Zabka. You know, he's just got that look.
Right.
It's perfect. Yeah, I like that.
Have you watched Cobra Kai?
I have not yet.
Oh.
I've heard it's great.
That first season is... The second season's not quite as... Oh, my gosh. Billy, yeah.
Yeah. I've heard he's really good in it.
Oh, he's so good.
I've heard Machio's really good in it, too.
Machio's good. It's Billy Zabka, though.
Yeah.
I'm
very excited to watch it. Season 3, is that out yet?
Not yet. It might be a good time to wait until season 3 comes out and just kind of binge it, because I think you'll binge through it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's his name? Is Kreese in it?
Mm-mm.
Is Martin Cove in it? Does he show up? Or is that a spoiler?
I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay. All right. Cool. Anyway, so no, he's the quintessential 80s villain. He feels like he fits right into like a John Hughes movie, doesn't he? Or like,
yes.
Or even like Less Than Zero.
Right.
So it's fun to see this character in a horror movie and to get his comeuppance in the nastiest way possible, you know? Yeah.
All right, so then we meet Detective Ray Cameron.
Ugh.
A haunted cop is called in to the cryogenics lab break-in where he discovers one of the bodies. The boy who was discovered the alien experiment in 1959 is now missing, set free by Chris and JC. The corpse makes its way back to the sorority house where he picked up his date 27 years ago. Let's talk about... Oh, there the head splits out and releases more slugs. Called to the scene, Dr. Cameron, Detective Cameron finds the body, interpreting the condition of the head as a result of an axe wound to the face. Let's talk about Tom Atkins here.
Yeah. Maybe we should just go through the rest of the plot before... No, I'm just kidding. Because we're going to be stuck on Atkins for a while. Tom Atkins... I always loved Tom Atkins. Always did.
For a while, kind of, for me, an undersung just hero of the genre.
Yes.
Yeah. I think absolutely. He's getting his... I mean, he's definitely lately.
He's getting his due now, I think. Yeah. But no, he's... I remember seeing him so much in my childhood. You know, at Creepshow, as the asshole dad. The Fog was a movie I saw early on that was super big for me at that young age. Lethal Weapon, another one I saw at a young age that I remember just, oh, this guy again, you know. It's that mustache that really makes him stand out, I think. That made him, that image of him indelible in my mind. Halloween 3, you know, I kept seeing him.
Yeah.
Escape from New York. I kept seeing him in all these movies that I, like, loved. And I can't even tell you that I remembered his name, necessarily, as a kid when I was watching these. But I remember, yeah, that guy, you know. And as I got older and the internet became a thing and IMDb became a thing, I started realizing, like, this is Tom Atkins. This is the... And you look through his credits and you're like, good God, look at all these great movies he was part of. I mean, he worked with Romero and Carpenter and, Shane Black and Fred...
Donner, yeah.
Donner. I mean, like, just so much talent the guy worked with and really so much talent the guy has... So I always loved and appreciated seeing Tom Atkins and stuff. Especially once I saw this is the Tom Atkins show. This movie is in a lot of ways. It's not because there's the other characters are enjoyable and likable. We talked about JC a lot and even our lead is he's a little more bland, like you said, but he's still Jason Lively's likable presence.
Yeah, that was a little mean.
He's the audience surrogate in a lot of ways.
I just kind of meant, and he's very much in the same mold as like a 50s
yes.
lead.
His performance is just fine. There's nothing.
Yes.
But when Tom Atkins is on scene, Tom Atkins is what you're looking at because he is having so much fun in this movie.
Yeah,
and he knows exactly what movie he's in. And he is. No one else could have played this role. And I think it's hard to... We've talked about a lot of movies, both on our podcast and off, and I can probably count on two hands the number of roles where I'm like, nobody else could be this character. This is Tom Atkins' role. He is very funny. He is very troubled in a lot of ways. He's very gruff. He's got this weird, he's got this thing that this Tom Atkins quality that like, where like you look at him and you're like, how is this guy like always like a leading man in like these genre movies? But then like you watch him and you're like, I totally get it. Like he doesn't look like the leading man.
He's a bit of a ladies man in like all of the movie. Cause like The Fog, he's with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Cause he's got like a dad, like an 80s dad quality where he's just kind of like rough and tumble, you know, that I think the ladies in the 80s would appreciate, you know. Now he's got this wonderful grandfatherly quality about him. That's just lovely. Anyway, so I always loved Tom Atkins as a kid. I love Tom Atkins even more now as an adult because I've seen these movies so many times now. I've seen pretty much everything he's done and I've met the man now twice. I had the pleasure of meeting him. And I truly say... had the pleasure of meeting the man twice. I would not say that about every celebrity I've ever seen. There are plenty that have been wonderful people that I got their autograph and took a picture and they were nice and fine and great and it was a nice experience. But Atkins is a rare breed in terms of, and I think you would agree, and I know you'll talk about it too, in terms of meeting people at conventions or wherever. He just is a nice, nice guy and just gives you his time and gives a shit.
And he had such a, he has such a, at least it seems like, and I'm sure it is, he has a genuine fondness for the genre work he's done. He has a genuine fondness for Halloween 3.
Yes.
Like, he has a fondness in the, I was watching the featurette today, and he has a, he loves this movie. He loves this little movie. He talks about how happy he is it's found an audience now. So it is, there's a genuineness to how he comes across. He's just salt of the earth fellow.
Very much. And he's got a very good sense of humor in real life. And you can see it on screen. You know, you can see that that's him, very much him, coming through. So I'm sure I've talked about it. I'm going to go through it briefly just for those of you who haven't heard the story.
Yeah.
So, and it's got a follow-up story, which I'll throw over to you. I went to Minneapolis, Minnesota. It was the first time I ever went to Minneapolis, which, by the way, I had a delightful time there. Obviously, there's a lot going on there right now. There has been this year, certainly.
It's been a while, but
I really enjoyed my time there. I think it was I thought it was a beautiful city. And all the restaurants, they serve tater tots, which I appreciate.
You're a tots guy,
I'm a tot guy.
I'll be too.
I love French fries. Don't get me wrong. And yeah. I don't feel like I'm settling for French fries. I enjoy French fries. But if I have the tots.
If a restaurant has tots, I'm getting tots.
I'm getting tots. No question. And all the restaurants had tots as an option there. In fact, Minneapolis is known for its loaded tots. That's one of the Minneapolis staples.
Were you there for a big buck tournament?
Yes. So we went there for a video game tournament. There's a video game called Big Buck Hunter. It's mostly seen in bars, restaurants, I guess arcades if you have arcades nearby. Basically, you pick up a plastic gun and you fake hunt deer and other wild animal with the plastic gun. There's a tournament every year. It's a big deal. Believe it or not, it's broadcast on wherever you watch game tournaments. It's become a big thing. And my aforementioned pal, Mr. Nauman, and his family were all...
Fan.
Yep, number one Critters fan. And his family were all involved in the tournament, all very good players, all his two of his brothers, his now wife, his brother's now wife... And my wife, Nikki, got really into it as well, just from going and watching them play. So Nikki was competing in the tournament this year, so we drove out to Minneapolis. And the day before the big tournament started, we got to go to the Mall of America, right? Like, it's kind of this Minneapolis landmark. We also went to the club from Purple Rain, which I felt very excited about.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was very cool. It's cool. It's super cool on the outside. You can see it in the 80s. Like, you can visually smell the sweat. And and the cocaine. Anyway, so
the purple sweat.
Yes, the purple sweat and the sex. We went to the Mall of America, and we wandered around and we checked it all out. And it's a very cool mall. And as we were leaving, we're walking out. We're literally going to walk out the sliding glass doors to leave the mall. And Nikki was a few steps ahead of me. She kind of was walking faster than me, or I don't know if I was looking at my phone or something. But I go, I saw this man walking towards me, and I was like, holy shit, it's Tom Atkins. And I knew. But I did that thing where I go, excuse me, sir. And he stops. And I go, are you Tom Atkins? And he goes, yes. Yes, I am. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I just kind of like, I think I dropped my bag. And I was like, I'm a huge fan. You know, I did the whole, you know, fanboying thing. God, it's so cool to see you. I've always, you know, I love all your movies. You know, and Nikki's over here blowing her nose because, like, she had a runny nose that morning. And so I'm like, Nikki, come on. Like, I'm like, can I get a picture? And, like, talking to him. And Nikki can see me talking to this guy, but she's trying to, like, wipe her nose, like, before she approaches. And I was like, can I get a picture with you? And he goes, are you in town for the convention? Well, it turns out he was in town for a horror convention. I didn't even know that was there, which is weird for me to not know that that was going on. But I didn't know. And I said, no, actually, I'm here for a video game tournament. And he goes, what kind of game? And I said, it's my wife. She's playing in it. You go and you shoot. And he goes, okay, that's strange. Like, he's like, right. He thought it was kind of interesting. He wanted to know more about it. Like, oh, really? They do this? And I was like, oh, it's an open bar. And he goes, oh, that sounds like a great time, you know? And so I was like, can I get a picture? You know? And he's like, oh, absolutely. And so I'm like, Nikki. And he goes, come on, sweetheart, get over here. You know, like, and she's trying to wipe her nose. So she runs over and we took a picture, and he asked her about the tournament. No, how do you prepare? And like, he was like, we talked to him for like 10 minutes. And he was just like the nicest guy. Like, he didn't have to take any time out of his day, but he was very sweet. And then we met him again at Motor City Nightmares, which is our local convention.
Yeah, Motor City Nightmares.
And you had not met Tom Atkins before. You had not met Tom like I'm like friends with him. You had not met Tom Atkins before.
Yes.
You had not met him before, but you wanted to get, he had some really cool Halloween 3, one of your favorite films.
Yeah, I love Halloween 3, and I like to try to get something Halloween 3 related at every convention I go
to.
Yeah,
it's one of your favorite horror films.
Yes, it's one of my favorite movies, and I watch it. I will be watching it on Saturday or maybe Friday night, depending. So I love it, and I always have.
Yeah.
And I think he's fantastic in it, and I've always gotten a real charge out of Tom. But
this is your first chance to meet him.
So this
him.
Is my first chance to meet right. him, and I'm not good with, like, cons and, like, meeting people. I'm kind of, when I first meet somebody, I'm always, like, kind of awkward anyway.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
you add in the fact, like, I don't know what to say. All I can say is, like, I'm a big fan of yours.
And they don't mind. I mean, most folks are going to be, well, thanks. You
right.
know? I mean,
I never fall out, like, I'm not, like, weird about it, but I'm just, like, I'm a big fan and I
yeah.
love to have
you. You don't know really, what do you say, right?
And I talk to him a little bit. But
Nikki's the same way where she's like, I don't know what to say.
I
like your movies. Yeah,
Yeah, I'm a big fan of your work. But he was very nice. We talked for a minute and just told him I'm a big fan. And he signed it, Turn It Off, Tom. And it was really cool. And then, you talked to him a little bit as well.
Well, I went up with you because I just want to be in the presence, you know, of the Atkins. And you got the poster signed. You guys were chatting for a little bit. And I said, you know, I met you once before, Tom. And he goes, oh, yeah, where, you know, I said, I met you actually at the Mall of America. I said, I don't know if you remember, and it was like a few years after, so I'm like, there's no way. Like, I bumped into you at the Mall of America, I was in Minneapolis, we were there for a video game tournament, he goes, oh, yeah, I remember that, and he goes, oh, that was funny, and he goes, yeah, I rode those rides all over the mall, so, shortly after I had met Tom Atkins the first time, he got on children's
It's like a
Dora
Snoopy.
The Explorer ride.
Oh, was it Dora the Explorer? When I was there, it was like Snoopy.
He went on, like, Dora the Explorer roller coasters by himself. Which is the best.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of content you'll only get on Horror Movie Yearbook because
you will not get that story anywhere else.
Who else other than us and Tom Atkins know that he rode around on the little awesome little roller coaster rides at Mall of America by himself? Anyway, so Tom Atkins, he's excellent in this movie. He's a wonderful man.
So
if you ever get a chance to meet him, he's great.
His introduction in this movie is a classic shot of him on the beach in a white tuxedo sipping from it. It should be like if it was like a driver, if you could pick your own driver's license, that should be Tom Atkins' driver's license. That should be his picture for anything he uses.
Yeah.
Identification.
Is it his IMDb picture? Because it should be.
It is not, but it should be. You are correct. So that's his introduction. But he also plays Detective Cameron, right? Mm-hmm. And Detective Cameron he's like a Raymond Chandler, like hard-boiled, Philip Marlowe-esque, like tough talking character, and we introduced him. He's reading a Raymond Chandler book.
It is fun
because you could tell that's what he's trying to model his thing after. And he walks around, he's got that big overcoat, but he's got a Hawaiian shirt underneath it.
So sweet. And it's like a button down to the navel almost.
Yes.
It's so good.
And he's spitting out one-liners.
Thrill Me is his big one.
Thrill Me is the one that
stuck,
but he calls him Spanky and Alfalfa, and then later on he says it's Miller time, and he's just spinning on all these cheesy one-liners, like a lot of the 80s action stars would do. So it plays as kind of a spoof of those, but a fun spoof. I'm going to do a couple real quick. I found a profile from the month this came out from Fangoria, a profile of Tom Atkins. So how he got in the Escape from New York, I believe it was, he had a chance meeting with Carpenter in 78. Carpenter, he was friends with Adrienne Barbeau, who was Carpenter's girlfriend at the time, and they were at a screening for Halloween, and he was talking about how much he was there with his wife, and she hated it, and he loved the movie. He was just like hooting and hollering the whole time. So Barbeau introduced him to John Carpenter after it. Oh, and that's how he got The Fog, excuse me, not Escape from New York. He got along very well, and he offered him a part in The Fog. So the other thing, too, is this ties into the 50s thing we're talking about, is Kenneth Toby is an actor in Night of the Creeps, and he has a part in Night of the Creeps, but he's also from the 1950s, The Thing, which talks about as one of his... He, like, went up to him, and the story tells he kind of, like, geeked out when he saw him because it was his favorite movie. One of his favorite movies when he was a kid. And then this... I'll do one more here. Not many people know this, but he's talking about Stephen King because they had met
on Creepshow.
And he had originally wanted to play the Jordy Verrill part, Tom Atkins.
Yes.
But that was the part King picked.
He said that's what
that's what he wants to play. So he ended up playing the dad part, and I think he's I think it all worked out.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're both great. Yeah.
But he became friends with King on this, and he says, not many people know this, but Steven has a book he's working on called The Plant. He does a chapter a year and sends it out to a few friends around Christmas. It is a real trip, but it can be frustrating. Last year, I got a chapter and read it through to a crucial point in the story when it suddenly ended. Now I have to wait until next year, or until this year, to find out what happens next. It is a great story. I only hope I live long enough to find how it ends. So if we ever get to see or talk to Tom Atkins again, I want to ask him
about
the story. I want to see if King's still doing this.
Yeah.
And I want to see like if he like has gotten near an end.
Too. Yeah. Is he just trolling?
Right. It could be one of, I mean, it's kind of one of those things too, where like, he's just going to write it until he dies. And,
yeah.
Like that's the point of it.
Yeah.
Like it's a very King thing to do.
It is
it's
a very King,
very
thing
writer
to do.
Thing to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, anything else to say about Tom Atkins?
No, he's excellent. My favorite Tom Atkins bit in this movie is actually when he is going to the evidence room at the local police department to get a flamethrower. And he's interacting with, what's his name?
Dick Miller.
Dick Miller. It's Dick Miller and Tom Atkins, two guys I love. And he's talking about the flamethrower, and he just starts cracking up. Like, it's just the interaction between the two is excellent. And I love the whole scene. It's my favorite bit in the movie. And Atkins is great, and so is Dick Miller. So, yeah.
One more thing he said. This is when 86 is when this interview came. If King's The Stand ever gets made, I want the bad guy part. The villain in that story is a flat-out son of a bitch. So he was campaigning for it.
For some Randall Flagg action.
For some Randall Flagg. The fraternity brothers then, they confront Chris and JC, who they believe are responsible for the previous night's incidents. Mm-hmm. They are taken into questioning by the police based on the testimony of a janitor. That they ran screaming like banshees. And this is a running joke for like 5 minutes in the movie.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
So that night,
isn't that the last line the guy has too? He's like, screams like a banshee.
Yes.
And then like, he
gets killed in the, that stuff is shot in the basement of a Woolworths, by the way.
Amazing.
Cynthia then attempts to convince Chris and JC that the attacks are zombie related, but they are skeptical. When JC sees Cynthia leaning on Chris's shoulder, JC leaves the two alone and is attacked by the slugs that emerge from the possessed janitor. Chris walks Cynthia back to the sorority house where he runs into Detective Cameron, who has overheard their conversation. At the house, Detective Cameron explained to Chris that the escaped lunatic's 1959 victim was his ex-girlfriend and that he secretly hunted down and killed an axe murderer in revenge. So
I love all that stuff.
This stuff, yeah, this scene's really great.
Yeah.
And it's also a deeper look into the Cameron character. And it provides a kind of grounding of the story. It's kind of, there's a melancholy to it all.
Yeah.
And a kind of a sadness that grounds the kind of silliness of the movie and makes everybody human.
Yeah.
Because it's obvious he's an alcoholic too.
Yeah, he's suicidal.
He's a suicidal alcoholic and he's got beer cans all around him.
Yep. Yeah, I love this scene. I think Atkins is like delivering a really solid performance. And I think Lively is too. I like the tying of him to the 50s plot with the girl being killed by the X-Men. Like the way those two things tie together and bring it into very quickly bring it into the events going on now with the slugs and the zombies and stuff. I love all that tie into it. I think it's very cool.
Yep. So then there's the stuff where the house mother, he gets called to the same axe-wielding lunatic, has killed the house mother. Detective Cameron blows the corpse's head off with a shotgun, which releases more slugs. So then the next night, everybody prepares for the formal dance. So we're coming up on the end here. Chris finds a recorded message from JC that JC says that the slugs have incubated it in his brain, but it's gnarly stuff, by the way, but he has discovered that they are susceptible to heat. So they get in through your mouth and they go up to your brain.
And take you over and turn you into a zombie. Right,
yes.
Right.
Yep. This is very Slither kind of crib from this. And it's kind of, I mean, there's a little bit. You can read a little bit of 80s kind of AIDS panic.
Sure.
If you want to.
Transmitted
diseases. In the midst of a suicide attempt, Chris recruits Detective Cameron, who was in the midst of a suicide attempt, and they retrieve a flamethrower from the police armory. They arrive at the sorority house just as Cynthia breaks up with Brad, who has become possessed. After killing him, the Beta fraternity brothers show up, despite having been killed in a bus crash. Cynthia and Chris team up to destroy the outside zombies, and Detective Cameron clears the house.
Yeah, we get one of the great the great genre movie lines, which is with the tagline of the film, which is the good news is your dates are here. The bad news is they're dead. Which is fucking phenomenal.
He delivers it
so well.
The only delivery that rivals it in this movie is when I believe it's Chris says it's all Greek to me when he's talking about the fraternity.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a really good line. Yeah, I love the bit with the breakup, like where she's breaking up with Zombie Brad.
Yeah.
Which is very funny. Like she doesn't notice. He's such a dork normally, such an ass normally that like she couldn't tell the difference right away. Yeah, the whole grand finale with the storming of the sorority house and just heads exploding and slugs flying out over the place and shotgun blasts and Cameron losing his mind and screaming and the camera spinning around him as he fires at all the...
That's great.
The whole thing is really sweet. And you get some fun team up between our romantic leads, you know, where they get to do a little bit of badassery together and kind of bond over it, which is fun. You get a nice lawnmower kill, which is perhaps a preview of things to come when Dead Alive would be released later.
The effects are by Berger,
yes,
who would go on to help
yeah, Kurtzman and Berger.
B.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The K and the B worked on this movie. They played zombies too.
So you mentioned the Dick Miller cameo. It's not really a cameo. There's an early David Paymer role.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he's in this, and there is a Shane Black cameo as well. He plays one of the cops, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
I didn't notice that. And David Paymer, of course, I noticed. he gets to play a zombie too. I love this finale. I love that it takes place at the sorority house. You get flamethrowers and lawnmowers and Detective Cameron going crazy. It just, the whole thing is a ton of fun. And it becomes this culmination of all the schlock and the B-movie references that you've been watching beforehand, and it just goes nuts and it's shit hitting the fan. And I think this is the point when this is like, this solidifies as like, this is a perfect movie to have on during your Halloween party.
Yeah.
Because it's just fun. You know, it's just a good time. So
it's very wink-wink. It's got some meta-ness to it. It's kind of ahead of its time in its way that in a way that stuff like Shaun of the Dead, where it's half in between spoof and half homage and half, it's not a full-on spoof. It's not like a scary movie, but it's more of an homage to movies past in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And it's very wink wink. Decker was only 26 years old.
Kind of impressive.
Yeah. And you can see that youthfulness too in a lot of it, because some of the stuff the circling around, it comes out of nowhere and it's great. But there is
great.
It is something that maybe an older director might not do.
Nope.
No, I think that's so. We'll go to the end. After they stop the horde, Chris spots more slugs racing toward the basement. Cynthia explains that a member of the sorority had received specimen brains for biology class.
Yeah, that's set up earlier.
Yep. Yeah. In the basement, they find an enormous pile of slugs and Detective Cameron tape across his mouth, prepping a can of gasoline. Detective Cameron begins counting down as he splashes gasoline, and Chris counts down in sync with him as he and Cynthia race out of the house. As Cameron opens up the house's gas valve, several slugs leap to attack him. He flicks his lighter, and the house goes up in a fiery explosion. Chris and Cynthia share a kiss as they watch the house burn. A couple things here. His character reminds me of Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah,
like,
well, for
he's
sure.
Like a suicidal kind of.
For sure. Yeah.
So there's another Shane Black tie-in. So he goes out the way he wants to go out in this. And so this movie has two endings too.
Yeah. So we should talk about that. Yeah. Like, there's a theatrical ending which was studio mandated, and there is an ending which is really on all the home video releases that I'm aware of. And I'm not saying it's on it as an alternate ending. It's the ending that's edited onto the movie. Yep. It's the only ending I've ever, I think, seen and was seen attached to the movie. I've seen the theatrical ending as a cut ending.
Right.
Usually it's the other way around, but the original theatrical ending is Cynthia seeing the dog from the sorority. The one that had become a zombie earlier, and I believe it turns into a zombie and shoots a leech at her, or a slug at her, and that's the end. It's very much your ha-ha, gotcha horror movie ending, right?
Yeah.
The ending that Fred Decker shot and intended as the ending, which is the one that's on, I think, was it on your Blu-ray as well?
Yes.
Okay. And I believe it's on, like, if you rent this on Amazon, I think it's the...
It's the
right ending. has a zombified Detective Cameron, who is burnt to a crisp, walking down the street, still smoking a cigarette, which is really funny. He falls down, his head cracks open, the slugs come out, they go to a local cemetery, and then the alien spaceship starts soaring over the local cemetery. So it ties back into the alien thing, and it maybe sets up a potential, you know, sequel, like, you know, in its own fun way with the whole cemetery thing. I mean, the director's ending is the better of the two. There's no question.
Yeah. He talks about it too, because one of the things he hates about that theatrical ending is it kind of invalidates the entire movie.
Yeah.
Specifically because it goes after one of the main guys. Like, yeah. He had compared it to Carrie, that Carrie ending too, around the time was kind of like, he likes that kind of horror has those kind of shock endings. Yeah. But that one feels more like, I don't like the Nightmare on Elm Street Freddy ending too.
Which one?
From the first one, where he drives off on a bus.
That ending is really I could have a whole podcast on that. There's like four endings they shot for that movie for Nightmare.
Yeah.
And they used all of them in one ending.
Yes.
And none of them, and they work, it works out worse. That movie should have ended, the best cut of Nightmare on Elm Street, and I'll end it here, it should have been them driving off in the car and it panning over to the girls singing the nursery rhyme and doing the jump rope, and that would be the end.
Yeah. So I was just comparing it to that because it feels more in line with that.
Yes,
so
it does.
It feels like that theatrical ending to me feels like kind of a cheap kind of...
Agreed.
Yep. Invalidating the whole movie. So that's the movie.
Yeah.
Overall thoughts.
Oh, it's a ton of fun. If you haven't seen Night of the Creeps, you absolutely should. It is a great way to spend like an hour and 20 some minutes just...
It's funny because
having a good time.
Yeah, he kind of complains about the studio wanting it faster pace, and I think it works in its favor.
I think it's A-okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it feels brisk. It works for me. It's just a fun movie. It's smartly written. It still holds up today despite the fact the time period it was made in and the setting, which is a college campus. So this movie could feel very dated. It doesn't to me. It feels the jokes still work. The Cameron character is hilarious and a ton of fun to watch. It's a fun movie. It really is. It's well worth watching.
Yeah, I will let Decker himself sub it up, because he talks in a featurette about how he got to include just about everything he loved in his first movie, which is space aliens, zombies, spaceships, a tough cop with secrets, a gratuitous sorority house nudity, comedy, and a climax that finds the geek hero taking out alien-infested frat boys with a giant flamethrower.
That's it.
So there you go.
That's it.
So you know what? He may not have made a ton of movies. He may not have been the most prolific filmmaker, but he got it all in. He got all his...
And it worked.
Yep. This was a couple of random trivia bits. It was in the released in the Philippines on 87 with free protector stickers heading out to moviegoers during the screening. I don't know what that means. There's an unofficial sequel called Night of the Great Zombie Towns. Are you aware of this?
Yeah,
it's
I
like
am.
A German film, right?
It's called Zombie Town, but it was released in some territories as Night of the Creeps 2. Zombie Town. It has nothing to do with Night of the Creeps. Yeah.
There are a couple of fun graffiti cameos.
Yes, there are.
There is a Striper Rules.
Yeah,
which
it's
refers,
my favorite part of the of the graffiti.
It refers to the band Striper. The makeup artist was Kylie, I believe. Sweet's relationship with future husband, Striper. Frontman
Striper
Michael
was the Christian hair metal band, I believe.
Yes.
Yep.
So are you a Striper fan?
No.
You know who's a big Striper fan? Because I just read his book.
Who's that?
Chris Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
Loves Striper.
Does not surprise me.
And then there is also, what's the second one? I'm blanking on it. Monster Squad.
Oh,
it's just
yeah.
a Monster Squad yep. in the background, right? Because yep. it had just gotten greenlit at the time.
Right.
At the time.
Which is
production.
Fun.
Yes. Which would refer to as
you can see these two movies taking place in the same universe. Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps. The Deckerverse.
The Deckerverse.
I could see that being
along with Predator.
I could see, like, Detective Cameron teaming up with the kids from the Monster Squad to solve some sort of monster madness situation. I'd be down to watch that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So highly recommended, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. I'm not going to go through this whole Fangoria like usual, but I've got the August one in front of me. There is one thing I want to quiz you on.
Okay.
Steven, so on the cover, of course, this is Maximum Overdrive.
Oh,
it's
boy.
It's got the Green Goblin truck on the cover.
Okay.
It's a Stephen King interview. It's time to direct my own movie.
How high was he during this interview, do you think?
Did I pull out any clips? I don't think I pulled out. There's a quiz that I want to quiz you on.
Yeah, it's gig related.
But I didn't read the
answer is he was pretty high on cocaine.
Oh, he's definitely high. If it takes place in like the mid to late 80s, Steven is all over the place. In this one, we've got Savini meets Leatherface. We have a Cronenberg interview about The Fly. We've got Christopher Lee talking about The Howling 2.
Hell yeah, my sister's a werewolf.
We have a preview of Aliens. We have an Overdrive, Maximum Overdrive contest where you could win a script from Stephen King. Oh. Imagine.
A fresh line of coke on it. Okay, I'm done with the joke.
We have Charles Band. Is Charles Band the new Roger Corman? Kind of.
In his own
way.
That's
kind of a good call.
Yep.
We have a story on the Grace Jones vampire movie Vamp.
Oh.
And then we have a story on Deadly Friend.
Oh, man.
And a Willard retrospective. So this is a good issue. I wish I would have read it a little closer. But unfortunately, I did not. So let's find this King quiz real quick. We have a stand. Okay, so Fango's Stephen King scream test.
Oh, man. Here we go.
These
Fangoria quizzes are a ton of fun.
Yes. I lost my spot.
The old Fangorias are a ton of fun.
They really are. Yeah. If you can find them.
They're well worth checking.
You can find them Internet Archive. And I say that because it doesn't really bother me because you can't access them legally.
No.
Because
I don't feel bad about that.
Yeah, even though I think Fangoria, the website itself, only has the first like 10 issues up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. What was makeup artist? This is called Stephen King's Scream Test. This is a little bit of a quiz for you.
All right.
I'll give you a couple. What was makeup artist Tom Savini's pet nickname for Creepshow's Thing in the Crate? And what well-known character inspired The Thing? Where are the answers to this?
Well, it's Fluffy was the
Fluffy
nickname. What, so they were asking what well-known character inspired Fluffy?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think I have the answers. I think this is how you can win the script.
Oh.
So like you have to find the
I think it was I don't know the answer to the second question. I think it was Taz from Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes? Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure about that.
Okay.
Yeah. You can still ask me the questions.
That's yeah. Fine. Where was most of King's Cat's Eye filmed?
I don't know. I don't know.
A scene was cut from the beginning of Cronenberg's version of The Dead Zone. The scene also appeared in the novel. Describe it.
Oh, my. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I thought they would have the answers. Name two actors Stephen King says he would have preferred over Jack Nicholson's Jack Torrance and Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Who would he have preferred? Like Burt Reynolds, you know? I'd go with Burt.
Burt.
Yeah, he'd like Burt for that.
Steven Weber.
We saw Steven Weber at a con once. He looked annoyed by Jake Busey. I don't know. We'll go Burt Reynolds. That would be the one I'd go for. He wants Burt.
Unless you want more. Dele Wallace starred in 1983's Cujo. Besides E.T., named three other films that Wallace starred in.
The Howling.
Okay, yep.
God, why am I blanking? She's in a ton of stuff. Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Very nice.
Yep. Certainly would have been an answer back then, but... and I believe she's in Rob Zombie's Lords of Salem as well.
There you go. That's good enough for me. And then, okay, so here's a shot in the Hitchcock tradition. It's director King appears in cameo fashion for Maximum Overdrive, and it's got a shot of him.
Oh my God! In front of the ATM,
and it's got a lot of it's got the chainsaw on the neck.
Oh my God!
So it's got a lot of gory shots for Maximum Overdrive and his. But unfortunately, I did not read close enough.
That's all right.
All right, classifieds. Let's get to the good stuff. Let's find out who's number one. All right.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I need to mention. So I had the Friday the 13th box that we talked about that last episode. So when Josie's looking at the box, she refers to them as, I go, okay, this is Jason number one, Jason number two, Jason number three, Jason number four, you know, down the line. So now she runs around going Jason number one, and it reminds me of the Fango.
Yeah.
Josie goes, Jason number one. So anyway, I'm raising my daughter right.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I bring this up because Oingo Boingo lives again, someone wrote in. I bring this up because today Danny Elfman just released a new pop single.
Oh, shit.
So yeah. Oingo Boingo kind of does live again.
Yeah. Love Danny Elfman.
Slayer, Venom, and Sodom rule in hell. Death to all mainstream metal. Down in hell we fight.
Whoa. Death to all mainstream metal.
Any Evil Dead or Stephen King fans write? I gotta find a good one. Okay, so here's a number one. Jason Barnett is a future makeup artist. Savini Fang, number one. Jack, fasten your seatbelt because it's going to be a bumpy night.
Oh, shit.
Sharon W. is my Sharona. Tom Savini, you're the best guy, but I'm the makeup artist of the future. Calling him out. Children without language are like aardvarks whispering upon the plains of Serengeti because Michael Jackson has no eyes.
Oh, shit. That got deep.
Heavy Metal Fangoria and Bruce P. Miller rule. Gore is great.
Yeah.
Norman Knock Loud in the shower. Let's find one more. Oh, Dawn of the Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Fango number one. Warm Body. I don't know about that one. We'll stop. Freddy Krueger and Jason fans, write me. I think that's... Who would believe that a girl who's afraid of the dark reads this? This one's kind of a lame one. Except for the heavy metal guy.
Yeah, he's sweet.
Okay, we'll end with this one. Let's feed Boy George to the zombies. Long live heavy metal.
Oh, shit.
All right. Willie, what are we doing next episode?
I don't know. What are we doing next episode? Are we digging into the box again?
Should we dig into the box?
All right. I'm going to go get the box.
Willie will be grabbing the box that is not good enough to go on the shelf. You can make sure to reach out to us if you have any more feedback for us. If you have the answers to that Stephen King quiz that we just failed miserably on. That was tough, though. You can let us know on Twitter at HM Yearbook, on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Horror Movie Yearbook. Then we are also at horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. And goodness gracious, we have got a whole box, a whole bin of DVDs staring at us right now. Willie is moving the microphone over to us. But yeah, you can find us on those places. Make sure to listen to the Game Nerds. If you live in America, go vote, because that's coming up.
Please do.
Yes. And Willie, what are we doing next time?
I don't know.
All right. We
got to dig around here, though. Oh, man. We've got some The Forgotten with Julianne Moore. Yikes. That is not good. How about...
Let's see what else we have.
Yeah, let's find something different. How about...
Oh, my God, Mindhunters?
No, let's not do that. How about Silent Hill?
Okay.
The only one worth watching. Silent Hill with Sean Bean.
Sean Bean and Radha Mitchell.
Indeed. How about that?
That sounds kind of fun.
I only have the full screen copy for some reason. There is a there's a Scream Factory copy. Yeah.
Is there?
Yes.
Silent Hill's kind of good, isn't it?
I dig it.
Yeah.
You down?
I'm down with Tyler.
Let's do Silent Hill, man. Yeah, Silent Hill. We were just talking about Resident Evil. This is kind of the other major survival horror video game series. That'd be fun to talk about it.
I have not played the game. Have you played the games?
Yep. Not my thing. No, which is strange. You would think I'd be into it, but I never got into them. I like the they're always a little bit too... The games are always a little bit too cerebral for me for games. I like a little schlock in my games.
Me too. I'm with you. But it's a survival horror type game.
Same idea. Tank controls. You're running around. You have very little resources available to you. Very similar in a lot of ways. Just tonally very different.
Very cool. All right. This will be fun. All right. So... Yeah, make sure to reach out to us. I think that's it for now. Willie, are you good?
I'm good.
You good with me? Ravi's putting it away. So, hey, everybody, stay safe out there. Thank you for listening.